Hello and welcome to Retrotainment. I'm joined again by my co-host, capital C, capital O, Greg. How are you doing, buddy?
What's happening, homie?
Ah, not too bad, not too bad. And this week we have a very special guest, Aaron Doyle, who is, I don't know if people could guess what sort of films he's into or what he's a fan of. It's kind of hard to tell sometimes, I think, with people. But
I'm going Disney.
I was going to say comedy is probably his big shtick, but would we be right there, Aaron, or?
Yeah, I do actually like comedy, but horror is my passion. I don't want to say everything because it sounds kind of sad, but I just anything to do with horror movies, comics, books, games, anything really, I'll consume it or give it a go.
Sure, why
Yeah,
not?
I did. Greg is definitely the same. He's the bigger horror buff out of the two of us. I'm big into my horrors as well, but nowhere near Greg, but I think you then supersede Greg, so
Well, just look behind them.
yeah.
Some think it's a bit mad, but everyone
Everyone.
has their vices, I suppose. So
Yeah,
I was going
well,
to say,
I
everyone
love
has
it.
their own cross to carry.
Yeah, well,
Yeah.
I mean, collecting stuff is now, it's becoming more considered more normal now, especially with the likes of like Funko Pops and stuff becoming so popular. And I'm glad to see that because now there's less of a shunning on people who actually collect stuff that would be a little bit more pricey than the likes of a Funko Pop.
And you know what the worst part is? It seems like I had this conversation a couple of times with different people, and it's like this thing of there's never enough. I feel like I never have enough. I'll get something and go, right, okay, I'm done. I'm done buying. I'm a huge physical media guy as well, and I have hundreds, if not thousands, of DVDs.
I'd be the same.
And then I dipped back into buying videos just for the box and the cover art. And now I've started to replace all the DVDs with Blu-rays while also keeping the DVD copy as well.
Oh, you can't get rid. You can't get rid, never.
Well, sure, you're only going to be offered about 20 cents if you try and trade them in or
Yeah.
anything, so.
So
Yeah.
it's like, and I get to points where I'm like, right, I fill a whole bookcase and I'm like, right, I'm done now for a while. And then I go online, I see an ad somewhere, or someone like you guys or somebody posts something, and I'm like, fuck, now I need that as well.
Yeah,
But
I'm the
great
same.
crack.
It's so bad, man. I put on Psycho Goreman on Shudder last night.
I literally just logged into Shudder there, and it's the first one that popped up, and I was like, that kind of looks like Jeepers Creepers mask right there.
It's really, I really enjoyed it. It's really fun. But like straight away, I was enjoying it that much that I looked up on Cavity Colors, I think, have a range of t-shirts and hoodies and stuff out now that are Psycho Goreman. And I was like, will I pay like 60 quid to get this shipped from the States
Yes, you
just because
will.
I like the movie?
Yeah, you will.
Yeah, and you'll
So.
debate about it for a week or two, and then you'll just go back and go, yeah, I will.
I have a lot of the t-shirts I got from Fright Rags
Yeah,
in the
that's where
States.
this Evil Dead one I have is.
Yeah, like I have a Dog Soldiers one, I have
Oh, nice.
Nightmare on Elm Street, we have a Freddy versus Jason one and whatnot. I got a couple of them when I was in the States.
One of the
And
ones that you have, Greg, that I love is it's not an actual horror one, but it's the Scooby-Doo bus
oh yeah, the
with all the
Mrs.
boys on it. I like that one.
That's.
Yeah, it's got the six main ones. It's got Scream, Freddy, Jason,
Oh
Michael.
yeah.
Yeah, everyone's seen it. It came out on Facebook a couple of years ago.
That's class.
My missus was coming close to Father's Day or something, and she bought it for me.
That's class. And I wouldn't mind. I don't know if it's a thing with people who are into horror, but I love Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, everyone does.
I love
I
Scooby-Doo.
think it's just a generational thing. I think it's just if you're of the age where it was on when you were younger, you definitely
Sitting
have
watch
some
it.
sort of love for it.
Yeah, well, like her dad sits has would sit and watch it with the kids, like, because he watched it when he was younger.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
That's class.
So but yeah, Aaron is obviously runs his own Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff called First Class Horror. Has a pretty good following, if he's not going to be too modest about it, I'd have to say.
Yeah, I mean, getting there, I again, another one of those things that never feels like enough, but
Yeah.
I guess I've tried to not focus on that as much now and more on like the depth of conversation I can have with people and get to know different people who are into the same things.
Yeah, well, horror is when people are into horror, I think. Maybe
Yeah.
not as into it as you, but when people are into horror, that is something that they really love discussing because so many people aren't into it.
Yeah.
Whereas with other ones like comedy and stuff like that, everyone kind of has a couple of favorites. Whereas if you're not into horror, you just know nothing about it.
Like I was listening to when you sent me the list there, I listened to your watch through of 13 Ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't know. I never really got the gist of watching a watch through movie party. Like, but I quite enjoyed it when I was driving to work. Like,
I didn't until maybe during all this lockdown stuff or something like that, I found myself going back and like listening to commentary with people who made the movies. And then I found a couple of podcasts that I like listening to. And every now and again, they were doing these commentary tracks. And look, I don't know if I listened to it 100% or it was just kind of like background noise while I was doing something else or driving or whatever.
Yeah.
But maybe that's why I enjoy it. It's just like long form and I can have something I kind of like in the background and I'm hearing bits and bobs.
Yeah, but it takes me an hour and 5 minutes to get to work. So I pop a podcast on just to pull out of the drive and then...
Pretty much done by the time you get in, yeah.
Unless it's a watch through and it takes an hour and a half.
Yeah, well, you know, still enjoyable. So, obviously the film we've gone for here is one that you've chosen, Aaron. It's the remake of House on Haunted Hill, the 1999 version. Mm-hmm. We always just take a quick look at the ratings on Rotten Tomatoes for these. So out of 62 critics, we see 31%, which is quite low, but also quite common for Rotten Tomatoes. Critics seem to have this thing of a lot of them will go on and go, it's a horror film, I don't like horror films. And you're like, yeah, you can't rate something down because you don't like the genre. Like, don't watch it then, you know. Don't give a rating if you don't like it, you don't like it.
Yeah, but it's a nightmare because they just as soon as the word horror or thriller is on it, it's below 50%, 60%.
But then the audience score is 42, which I think is a little bit unfair. I don't think that's, like, I'd say kind of 50 to 60% would have been more fair for this, but I think a lot of people compare it to the original, which has
Vincent Price,
80% on it. And it's not that much. Like, it's, you know, I don't think it's that much better than this. So I think there's a bit of a nostalgic view to it maybe that impacts those ratings, but I definitely don't think 42 and 31 is a fair rating on this.
It's a decent horror movie, to be fair. Like, it does its job. It's a group survival with ghosts. Not much really can go wrong when you think about it in a way.
Yeah, well, I don't see, like, I didn't, like, there's nothing that I sit there and go, oh, this could be improved massively. Like, this is what they did wrong and this is what I would do to improve it. I have nothing like that really to say about it. It's not completely scary. Like, it doesn't, you know, you're not creeped out or anything by it. But it's enjoyable to watch through, and the story that they tell, I think, is quite good.
They got a big enough cast for it too.
Mm.
Like Jeffrey Rush obviously went on to do Pirates of the Caribbean and whatnot. He's an Oscar winner. The Frankie Jemkin, who went on to do X-Men. Bridget Wilson, obviously Billy Madison, and she did. I know it wasn't a great movie, but I quite like it. The Mortal Kombat, the original Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, I have a bit of love for that as well.
Peter Gallagher's obviously, who's a good actor as well. He was in Mr. Deeds, probably my favorite role that he has. Ali Larder was obviously, she jumped into Final Destination and whatnot as well. She made a name for herself along the way. Like,
and then Spike, obviously the cameraman Spike.
Yeah,
you know, that's something I actually didn't spot until today.
That he's Spike?
I have no idea how I never noticed that before.
It's because I don't know if you see his face properly, really. Like, it's only you kind of see like a half panel of his face.
Yeah. I never spotted that till today. I was looking.
Now,
was
if like, he had,
I mean, he's only there for a very short time as well. To be fair,
if he had the blonde
spiked hair, you'd probably have noticed. All right,
yeah.
It does look a bit different. But it had like a decent enough box office at 40.8 million. So, you know, not a flop by any means.
Like, I'd say they spend a bit getting the cast in, though. Like, I'd say if you could find out how much it actually cost,
I was looking that up and looking at different interviews. So I was a big Dark Castle Entertainment guy when that came back. I love Ghost Ship.
Ghost
Ship has, in fact, the best death scene ever. Best opening scene ever.
Thank you for saying that. I always tell people that, and they're like, nah, don't know, not really.
What other opening scene can you think of in a film that kills probably 200 people in about 3 seconds?
It is. It's quality. The cost for this was 19 million. So it did make money, but I'd say a good portion of that did go on the actors and actresses involved.
Well, so apparently after marketing, now I don't know how true this is, but I had seen a couple of different interviews with people who worked on the movie, etc. Apparently after everything, it cost closer to $37 million.
So they didn't make too much.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And I think this is what a lot of people reckoned it, you know, this whole Dark Castle thing, when it came back, it was just a flop because none of them really, I don't think, done.
Yeah, 13 Ghosts has got itself a right following, though. Like every now and then you see on Facebook, it might be your own page, it could be other pages that I see as well, where people are like, oh, they need to do a 13-part series about all the ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'd 100% be down to watch that. But like I remember this coming out. I would have only been 9 when this came out, but I remember the build up to it on the telly. And I remember coming out on video, and I used to hang around in the video shop across the road from my ma's house. And I remember renting this out. They gave it to me because they knew me. Like I think it was 11 or 12, and I had the red video box and the hand print was the cover.
Yeah.
And I went home and I watched it about 3 times, once after another. And then I don't think I watched it since, until today.
I think, like, in terms of an opening for this film, I think the opening is quite good. Other than, like, I bought it on Google Play and watched it on that. There's no noise for the opening credits of, like, Warner Brothers until they get to the Dark Castle bit. And I was like, hang on. They sold me this film with no audio. Like, what's the crack here? And then it finally kicks in. And I was like, all right, thank God. I was like, oh, if I've bought this and there's no audio, I'm going to lose my mind. Yeah. But it opens in like the insane asylum sort of thing with the doctor, and he's performing surgery on patients that are still awake and just bound and gagged, essentially. And then obviously we see the patients have all managed to escape whatever rooms they were meant to be locked up in. Never explained, but they attack and kill pretty much all of the main cast, and it goes into shutdown, and then a fire starts from somewhere that kills most people. But I think that's a really strong opening scene, in that it doesn't, I would have liked a little bit more
as to why
later in the film if they threw back to that a little bit more and gave us a little bit more of the history of how this all came about, like how he got all these patients. And we obviously see some of the later in the film, we see some of the like mutilated bodies, like your man on the horse and stuff. And I'm like, well, hang on. Yeah, I'm like, well, hang on now. How did he manage that? Like, I would like some sort of throwback to how that happened, maybe. But I think that's a good opening scene, and it sets the scene of, you know, okay, we know something bad happened here, so that's why the house is haunted. It gives you
It runs it straight down. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. That's why it's haunted. Doctor, mad doctor, patients killed him. Big fire kills everyone. House is haunted now.
Easy.
That's all the premise you need for that, I think.
I know a lot of stuff I think got cut from the movie. There's a lot of deleted scenes on the Blu-ray.
Oh, right.
There was a whole backstory with the Pritchard character.
I would have liked that now, yeah.
And I think there was more backstory as well, just around the whole lore of what was going on.
Oh, I'll have to find a Blu-ray then of it.
Yeah, apparently when it went to the editing room, they just kept...
Well, as far as I know, it was meant to be 2 hours and 15 minutes or something, and they shredded it down to an hour and a half.
Yeah, well, that had been seen 2 hours and 15 minutes would be normal now, but back in 1999, a film going past an hour and a half was nearly unheard of. Like,
yeah, but then you had James Cameron bring Titanic out that was like 61 hours long.
Yeah, but that was, you know, that was the one that broke the mold, and you know, everyone was like, oh, but it's only a one off, and you know, then obviously like Lord of the Rings and stuff started doing them longer. But at that time, 1.5 was considered
it was a prop.
Like that's if you're going longer than that, you'd like, you know, you've gone too far sort of thing usually. The next scene we see is them at the amusement park and the roller coaster. And I was just saying to Greg before we came on here, I was like, I love roller coasters and all that. Well, if you got in onto that roller coaster and they're like, yeah, you should take this lift up, and then the lift failed, you'd shit yourself. And then you get onto the roller coaster, and there's a thing going across in front of you. First of all, that kind of freaked me out because I'm like, I'm a bit close to that set of carriages. Like, I definitely shouldn't be this close. And then you see the carriage fly off the thing. You would shit yourself. Like, that is it. Like, nobody's getting off that, you know, off that roller coaster with clean pants. You know, wear the brown pants when you're going on it. Nobody's getting off that unscathed.
Oh yeah. Like I don't know
how they do that. Like, is it like Greg was saying, is it they don't go in and explain it, but is it just meant to be holograms and stuff, or is he actually firing this yoke off the end? Like,
because I when I was watching that today, I was thinking about that, and then it shows, you know, he's saying we have a problem, and
yeah,
he is replacing dummies of people.
Yeah, so I was like,
do they just have like a constant stream of like
carriages
that are just flying off into nowhere? Well,
like I was saying to Ted before we came on, I was actually on that roller coaster, so that's the Incredible Hulk. And like, as you know, if you've been on it, Ted's been on it as well. Like, underneath it's all water.
Mm-hmm.
So like the carriage isn't going to get that damaged.
Yeah, it's not going to get massively damaged, but I mean, still coming from that distance, like after 4 or 5, it's probably going to be beaten up a bit. But I was like, geez, yeah. Like, I love roller coasters, but I don't think I'd, like, if you didn't know that was the, like, you'd want to know before you got on that, you know, this is what it does, because otherwise, I'd say you have a few deaths on your hands, like, because people are going to have a heart attack on that yoke, like, and you can't just stop it midway through when they're up there, like, get the doctor up there, like.
That's funny, though, when they're taking the dummy off, and he's just like.
Yeah. What I do like, though, is that it shows Stephen Price how in-depth his character goes into these tricks and stuff, which we then later learn is something that he always does for her birthday or for Halloween and stuff like that. He does go in-depth into these, which is why she believes that, you know, the haunted house is just him having, like, one of his tricks done, because he obviously does put a lot into having the
like,
the tricks look very realistic, like.
When she's in the bath watching the, I'm nearly 100% sure it's In Search Of, when they're talking about the house on Haunted Hill.
Yeah.
Like you see her and she's like, I want to have my party there. So then you know something's up.
Yeah.
But even the little camera work in there where he's finished talking, it's flashing to the house and then the flash of the doctor comes up and fades away again real quick.
Yeah.
On the telly, you're like, yeah, there's really good camera work in this.
I think they're very quick on that. Like, they are just little flashes, but it, you know, you're given little bits, and then you see him shred the entire list.
Yeah, I sent you my party list. Yeah, that's shredded.
Yeah, and then he makes his own one, which then it goes back to the screen, well, and the computer has changed it.
There's a funny thing with that. So the original list, there's like 5 or 6 people on it. Is the director, the 2 producers, and the serial killer that William Malone directed in Tales of the Crypt, they're the 4 names that are on it. And then obviously it changes to
whatever the names are, yeah. Which, like, it gives you those little bits, and you're like, okay, something's going on here. So, like, from the start, I was, like, I'm looking at this, and I'm like, this is really getting set up really, really well. So I was like, how has the rating on this been put so low with this sort of start being so, so good?
Yeah, like it builds suspense really quickly, and it just kind of winds it along at a relatively slower pace at the start.
But yeah,
like as soon as they get to the house, then it starts to ramp it up.
Well, I like when they're all in the limos coming up to the house, and they're all like, "Yeah, we get $1 million if we, you know, if we come to this party and stuff." But none of them know, and they're all like, "Does anybody know this Price guy, or what's the story?" And they're all like, "Nah, never heard of him."
Yeah,
do you know what I find mad as well? I don't know whether I believe this or not, but that story that Jeffrey Rush was never meant to look like...
Yeah, Vincent Price.
Price, he was supposed to look like John Waters,
the director. Yeah, he came out, apparently, of the dressing room with that mustache on. And they were like, what are you doing? And he's like, this is what I'm going with.
It is a very John Waters looking mustache, to be fair.
The name, I don't think, was supposed to be Price either, until Jeffrey Rush told him that this is what's happening, because he wanted to pay
an homage
to Vincent Price.
Yeah.
No, again, it's something that I've read, and it's hard to believe.
That probably is true, and it whether it was him that said it or the director that decided to put it, I would say that the reason that Price, the surname is Price, is to do with Vincent Price. I would say that is probably true.
Yeah. But yeah, apparently he came out with the mustache on. It was like, yeah, this is what I'm going with.
Well, I think the mustache is great. Like, I think he does really well with that.
Like, if I see him in anything, even older stuff, all I can picture is him as Barbossa in Pirates of the Caribbean.
With the little mustache.
Yeah.
That would be good.
I'm hoping you threw that out the window.
No, into someone's face. No, so they get to the house, and you know, Evelyn walks. They're all standing there, and they're like, "What's the story? Where is everybody? I thought this was meant to be a party." And then Evelyn walks in, and she's like, "Who are all you people?" And they're like, "I don't know. We got invited. Who are you?" And she's like, "It's my party."
What?
And then the glass ceiling smashes and nearly kills her.
The stained glass they have on the roof there is brilliant, because obviously in the scene where the asylum's being taken off, you see all the inmates looking down on them, looking in the window. And that's what they have on the stained glass.
Yeah, it is. It's very, it's very just, you know, it's a little throwback, I think.
Yeah, it's a little tweak to it. But like in this scene then, obviously you see the glass smash on the table. And somehow they stop her getting slashed up. But she apparently actually done that stunt where she stood under the glass herself.
I can't imagine it was real glass, to be honest. I think that would be too big a risk.
Apparently, she stood under it as it came down. Like,
I would say she did, but I don't think it was real glass.
Yeah, it was. I think there was two skylights. One was candy glass, is it?
Yeah, like sugar glass.
And then the shard that falls right beside her was fixed to some sort of metal rod. So
and pulled down.
Yeah, it couldn't go anywhere other than. But she did lie, apparently, right there and let it. And
fair
like
play,
I think they were trying to talk her out of it, being like, "Look, this could still potentially go wrong. So, you know, have you ever heard of the crow or anything like that?"
Yeah,
so,
like maybe don't take too big a risk.
Those things don't happen.
Yeah, well, so she gets saved by Eddie, obviously, and then we see Stephen Price come in, and he explains to them, you know, like, "I've got these 5 blank checks. You get $1 million each if you last the night." And what I love is Pritchett is just, he's real like, can I just get my money? Can I go? Like, I really want to go. And they're like, they're all kind of looking at him like, "Man, what the fuck's wrong with this?" Like, he's like tweaking out. What's the story with this guy? And he's just like, "No, just give me the money so I can go, please." I just, because he knows, he's 100% aware, but he's not willing to tell them how bad the house is. But he's like, "I want my money and I want out."
Well, you'd be in right questionable as soon as you pull up in the limo and you're made walk up the driveway.
I think he'd be questioned if, you know, "Oh yeah, I rented my house out to these 6 people and they all died."
Yeah, probably true.
I mean,
no, but the only thing is here, like, your man Pritchett, the character is, I just can't look at him in this and not see him in One Night at Roxbury. Him and Will Ferrell.
Yeah, I think he plays the real tetchy character so well, though. Like, the whole way through, he's just on edge.
Yeah.
And then we see, obviously, the security guard who... Stephen's like, "Yeah, good job on that glass." And he's like, "Yeah, that wasn't me."
he's another good actor as well. Max, what's his name? Max Perlich, Petrich, something like that.
Yeah.
He's a man from Cliffhanger.
Once the money is given to Pritchett, the shutters start to come down.
Yeah.
He panics and they're all like, "Oh yeah, this is pretty cool." You know, like, "Oh, he's really gone all out for this." And he is like, "Get me out, get me out, get me out, get me out, get me out."
He is almost Indiana Jones and under that door.
I was convinced the first time I saw this, I was like, he's going to go to slide out under that and get cut in half. That I was like, that is 100% what is happening here. There's no way that they're just going to let him escape.
I was 100% sure that I'd say there was a scene where that was going to happen.
I think if it does happen, it changes the film a bit too much, because then you start a bit too early with the killings, possibly.
Well, they needed him also to tell the story.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, he is an important character. But he comes back and he's like, "Yeah, we're all dead." And they're like, "Yeah, all right, mate, calm down a bit here, will you?"
Yeah, I love that little piece of dialogue he has there where they say something about, I can't remember who he says. He's like, "Somebody's going to call here in the morning," or something like that.
The security guard.
Yeah, and then he's like, "All right, okay, cool. We'll just wait till then." And he's like, "No, I'm pretty sure we'll be like savagely ripped apart by then." Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. I loved it.
And it's just him sitting at the bar with a bottle of scotch.
Yeah. He's just like, "We're all dead." He just starts drinking. And then.
Well, I suppose, like, if you know what's coming.
Yeah, I suppose. What I like is that obviously the rest of them just don't believe this. And as we've seen, Stephen Price is great at all this sort of trickery and he goes all out for it. So his wife is, Evelyn's just like, "Yeah, all right, okay, come on, next. Let's get to the next bit. Let's stop all this. Like, let's get this out of the way." And he opens the big coffin, and it has 6 little coffins in it, all with a gun inside them. And I'm like, wait, I'm intrigued as to what was he planning? Like, what was the actual story that he was planning on telling?
It was meant to be a murder mystery weekend or murder mystery night, as far as I know.
Yeah, but that's, even that still seems a little bit much that he was willing to offer people, because he didn't know the house was going to go into lockdown. So that he's expecting that people would have left so that he doesn't have to give them each $1 million.
Yeah.
So, like, what was his plan? Well, here's six loaded guns or blanks, but none of them are blanks.
Now we find out what her plan was later on. Though.
We do find out her plan, but his plan, I'm like, that's...
I think he was just doing it to keep her happy.
Yeah, but like, he has to have had, like, you know, he had to have a story in his own head that he's like, this is how it's going to go down. This is how I'm going to scare these people into all leaving so I don't have to give out, you know, $6 million.
Well, he obviously had something in his mind, because he has the guy watching the cameras and has everything rigged, ready to go.
Oh, yeah, but that's what I'm wondering. I'm like, what was his plan? Because whatever his plan was just gets screwed up pretty much straight away when
he's talking to him and he's like, "You, well done on your shutters, you're a bit early." And he's like, "I didn't do that."
Yeah, I didn't do that. And he's like, "Oh, okay." So he goes back down and then we see the light. Well, not the light. The lights don't really go out, but the shutters, they're like, "How do we fix this?" He's like, "Oh, we go down to the basement," which, you know, in horror, like, rule number one, obviously, that's the first place you go, into the dark, creepy basement.
It's either the basement or it's the attic, one or the other.
Something, mm-hmm. somewhere creepy. That's where you go, you know? Like, that's definitely where you'd go if you thought there was something, like, really wrong. So Eddie, Sarah, and Pritchett go down. And yeah, they're wandering around in this... We see the fleshless horse with the rider, I assume it's a baby. I don't really know. With like horns and stuff coming out of its head. There's all this weird stuff. And you're like, this is a... If I walked down those stairs and that was the first stuff I'd seen, I'd probably be like...
Good joke.
I'll probably just head back upstairs. Yeah. I'll just leave the things closed. It's fine.
They're all cast, I think, from some sort of real life experiments that happened.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me when you read about some of them.
The name of the guy, but they had went, apparently this stuff was all embalmed, and they went and got copies of everything and cast all the molds exactly like that.
That's
probably one of those things that go into a natural history museum or something.
Bodies,
is it the one that comes to Dublin every so often?
It could be that, yeah. But I just, for me, if I walk down and that was the first thing I seen, I would be like, you know what, I'll probably just stay upstairs. And, you know, nothing overly spooky has happened other than, you know, the shutters have come down. That's the most spooky thing. So, and obviously your man who owns the house being like, yeah, we're all going to die.
And the glass.
Yeah, the glass, the shutters coming down, and then this, you know, we're all going to die. I'd still probably, if I walked down and saw that, I'd probably be like...
Probably not going to stay here, to be honest.
I think I'll just take my chances upstairs. I mean, yeah, we might manage to get those shutters open, but... He's already told us it's like a maze down here, and the first thing we see when we come down here is a load of fleshless bodies. Probably not for me, guys. But they're just like, yeah, this is cool, let's just keep going. And every room they go into, it's just like, oh, this is a chamber where he felt that, you know, if your mind was warped, this would be how you warp someone's mind. So if your mind's already warped, stick you in here, a load of flashing images and stuff, because your mind's already warped, it'll like reverse it,
the container.
Yeah, and then it's like, oh, and this is electroshock. Every room you go into, it's just progressively worse. I'd be like, we really shouldn't be down here. Like, this is really not a great place to be. And we see the door, and they're like, what's behind that door? And he's like, never opened it.
Probably not going to either.
Yeah, but I mean, that means he's been down there and looked at all this stuff previously himself, if it was never, or his father or grandfather had.
Well, as you find out just before they came down, that the two of them had actually died.
Yeah, and he's lied for years about how they died. Oh, that was in an accident, and he was at home. And then he's
in
like,
Miami.
Yeah, no. He's like, yeah, no, that's not true. The house killed him.
Yeah, house fucked him up good.
Yeah,
yeah. Because my question there was, why doesn't this guy just get rid of the house?
Well, yeah. Like, did you see it? Looks unreal, built into a cliff.
I suppose he's. I think his whole backstory was he's like living in his car, has a shitload of debt, and I think he has to pay the state taxes on the place. But they already get rid of it, so he's just stuck with it.
Yeah, see, that's something that they probably should have said, because you'd be like, why is he holding on to this? Like, really, yeah,
that was my first thought. If I was there, number one, I wouldn't leave that lobby area. And number two, I'd be asking him, why do you have this house?
Oh, no, yeah. I'd 100% believe in the lobby. It's too big, too many entrances. Put myself in one little room with everybody. In the corner. It'd be grand.
Possibly.
But everyone in front of me, and I'm going to sit right in that corner.
I definitely wouldn't be going downstairs into the creepy area. But
his hole is like a maze.
Yeah. But the one, like, it's not scary, but, like, the first kind of jump scare, I suppose, they have in the film is that when they're walking around and then Price steps out in front of them. And you're just like, wait, appears. I thought this was like a maze. How the hell does this guy know where he's going?
So you know he's been there, like.
Yeah, so then the four of them are going around looking for the, however to get these doors open. And they're in the room where there's, you know, for the, whatever the hallucinogenic chamber is. And then Price and Pritchett just disappear. And you're like, okay, that's a bit weird.
So the lads are gone. It's grand.
Yeah, the two of them walked into that room. We'll just leave them there. And then Eddie and Sarah come back out and they're like, where are they gone?
Now, what gets me here is like she's able to rewire that circuit to hit the lights on. In the next minute or two, you see her. She's like, I can fix this.
I was certain when she sticks her hand in, I was like, something has to happen there. Like, yeah. When she, like, that's a horror trope. You stick your hand in there, something bites it or grabs it or something. Yeah. And I was like, what's going to happen? And then nothing happens. You're like, okay. What are they building to here if that's not the point?
Then to me, with that, like, when nothing happens there, you're thinking, right, well, there's the romance being built between him and her. Because when he picks her down off the thing, you're like, yeah, oh, it's happening now.
What I like is that straight away from there, he's like, yeah, because she's claiming to be like a high-powered movie director. And he's like, yeah, you're not, because you definitely wouldn't know how to fix lights if that's the job you were in. Like, no way.
Yeah, she just comes clean then, but she's talking. Well,
she comes clean to who she thinks is him, but
there's no one there.
Again, they've somehow been separated, and she's now hearing kind of laughter and like noises, and then she's seeing him. So she's like following him, like, this isn't funny. And then he jumps into this vat of like boiling. It's not boiling, but like it's just a vat of blood. And she's like sticking her hands into it. I mean, like, probably not stick your hands in there.
Definitely not for a stranger.
No. I know you about 15 minutes, pal. That's not happening.
Yeah.
No, yeah, and I know you about 15 minutes. We're down in these dark tunnels and you walked off on me and left me on my own. Like, I know he doesn't actually walk off on her. I know the house does that. But like in her mind, I've known you about 15 minutes. You've called me a liar and called me out on this. And then you left me. And then you somehow jumped into this vat of blood. And the first thing I'm going to go do is going to walk over and stick my hands in there to get you.
I wouldn't mind. He doesn't even pencil dive into it. He bends his knees and everything and just kind of fumbles into it.
Yeah.
And you're like, but, how did you not hit the other side?
Yeah. What I do like, though, is that she's like got her hands in. She's like, come on, give me your hand. And then he walks around the corner. He's like, what are you doing? And she's like,
and then she gets pulled
you
down.
Just jumped in there. And he's like, no. No.
Yeah, and then you can see something tugging at her, and she's going back down.
Yeah, he runs over and saves the day.
Good guy, Eddie.
Yeah, they walk back upstairs because they now
are freaked.
Well, one, they're freaked, and they now know all the tunnels apparently because they managed to make their way back easily enough.
I found that strange.
Yeah, whenever they needed to get out of those tunnels, they seemed to find it pretty quickly, so that was fine.
You can't imagine there's that many tunnels that can be if there's two rooms on each side. You know what I mean? The house isn't that big.
Yeah, but, you know, they made a point of telling us it's like a maze down there. And then everyone seems to know their way around.
I love how she's like when they're walking, she's like, if we just keep turning right, we're going to get back to where we're going sometimes.
Well, I mean, she's not wrong in that. But, I mean, just stuck my hands into a big vat of blood, I'm not going to be that. I'm going to be like, just go back the way we came.
Like, the funniest thing I found about that was, all I could think back was when I was learning to drive and letting any out the sticks, it was like, I got told, if I get lost, just keep turning right down the country roads, you'll end up back at a main road some stage. And I was like, no, I won't. I'll just end up back around in a circle or a square. Like,
It does tend to work out. It shouldn't work out. You're right that it shouldn't, but it does tend to seem to work out to do something like that.
Yeah. When she said it, I had a good old chuckle to myself. It's like, yeah.
When they get back upstairs and her hands are like covered in blood, Evelyn's...
And her hair. She has a different top and everything on.
Yeah, Evelyn's having a drink at the bar. Pritchett's back drowning his sorrows.
He knows what's coming.
The MD, Blackburn, he's just kind of hanging around. He hasn't really gone anywhere. And she comes back up with blood all over her. And they're like, what happened? And she's like, oh, I saw him jumping, fake him jumping to a vat of blood. I tried to save him and then he saved me. And everyone's just like,
all right.
Okay. I mean, if you haven't been there for that, you're going to be like, listen,
she's kind of, she's questioned on it as well, though, because he's like, he said something about being fake or something. And he's like, does that look fake? There's blood all over her hair. And
yeah, but that, like, he questions, he's like, I think you're lying. And it's like, well, like, one, she's clearly not lying because she's covered in blood. And two, even if she was lying, how did she get covered in blood? People just kind of let this go. Like, it was just kind of, that's probably one of the big problems with this film, is that they do seem to just let things like that go a bit too easily. Like, you know, if you were in that situation, you wouldn't really be just like, yeah, she came back covered in blood. It's fine.
Be grand.
It makes me wonder about the director's cut.
Was that out?
Was that a flaw of it being edited so much? Yeah. Or is it just a flaw in general?
Yeah. And like, I always say that, you know, in films, I kind of, when I'm doing this, I'm kind of looking for flaws. When I watch a film, I don't really, like, when I was watching it, I'm not noticing that flaw. I need to rewatch it and be like, okay, that's why maybe people didn't like it. But they get back up here and they're like, where's your one that had the little camera? Like, where's she gone? They're like, oh, she went downstairs.
Yeah.
There's only one way downstairs. We just came up the stairs. What do you mean she went down? When did she go down? And she's only at the entrance, so they have to have passed her.
Sonya Blade doesn't last long in this one.
No. I do like that she walks down and she sees all the stuff. And, you know, like, she's trying to find, like she says at the start, like, I'm trying to find something that'll get me on telly and stuff. And she's like, video and all this stuff. And you're like, yeah, that's what you would do, all these creepy, like, skinless bodies here.
Yeah, her line was, I'm looking to get back in the power or fuck my way back in.
Yeah. And everyone's like, yeah, classy.
Hollywood at its finest.
But she goes down. What I like is when she's recording the table and you can see the old doctor performing the surgery.
This is a brilliant bit of scene.
She takes it down and she's like,
If that's not horror 101, there is when you have a light or something and it's just shining and it's far away and you're like, oh wait, and then you turn it off for ages and then they're just standing there and you're like, oh yeah.
What I like is that the doctor and the nurses turn to look at her. But that's them looking at the door back in the day, because that is what happened. Like, we see in the, like, at the start that they do turn to look at that door before everyone breaks in, and I like that they replay that, like, so it's not just them looking, they're not looking at her, it's just the image being replayed
and the subtlety of the orderly behind them, behind her,
whatever it is behind her, because then it just runs at her, sort of, or like
glitches
at her. And I like that you don't get to see what happens, you just hear her scream and they all,
and they just know where she is. Like, it's
yeah, well, they got told that she went down there and she's still pretty much in the entrance.
Yeah.
Because she kind of runs back a few steps. So she's still basically in the entrance.
Gets all sorts of battered.
Yeah. But they get down and they just see this trail of blood and they're like, it just stops here. Where does it go? Right. And they're all just like, yeah, this is really weird. Where does it go? And one of the, Sarah eventually looks up and goes, up there.
Then
she's dragged across the ceiling somewhere else, and then into like a cubby hole of the house. And your man's like, "The house got her."
Like, to me, that looks like a bit of a throwback to the original Nightmare on Elm Street, where Tina in Nightmare on Elm Street is dragged up through the ceiling. But what you don't know, well, you might have noticed, or you might have noticed, when they first walk into the house, and there's a couple of things. Freddy Krueger's glove is on the wall.
Yeah.
So I was like, is that another little throwback where, obviously, you don't see it in very many films where the person's being dragged along the wall or the roof.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that could be a nice little throwback in there along with the glove. Like,
that's something I didn't think about, actually, and you're probably right.
I think this film kind of is doing a few little throwbacks to old stuff, but they made them very subtle so that you'd have to kind of be like, into horror big time to actually catch it.
Yeah, like I caught the glove quite quickly. I noticed it in a few different movies. You see it, but like I seen it and I was like, "Oh, right, yeah, that could be. It couldn't be." And then when I seen that, I was like, "Yeah, it definitely was. Mm-hmm. Definitely was."
But her body is just missing now, and they all get back upstairs.
The tape is missing from her recorder as well.
Well, the tape is there, but it's all been dragged out.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So they go back upstairs and they somehow get it to replay, but it just replays her collapsing and being dragged off, and it's just her hand, which I do think is good. But I don't know. It would have been good if they got to see the doctor footage. Yeah, if you heard, well, like even if like if you got to see that doctor image or something, and they'd be because it could have been explained that, you know, oh well, that's just obviously something she filmed before they got here, and your man Pritchard could have been like, no, that's what happened here, to kind of move the story along. But they just kind of watch that, and then Evelyn's like, yeah, I'm bored, I'm going to bed.
Yeah, she's playing everything off as a joke.
Yeah, which I do, again, I understand her being like that, because obviously she married to Stephen, and she thinks, you know, this is just him doing that.
They make it fairly clear that they have quite a toxic relationship.
Yeah, they really don't like each other.
So she's riding everybody, and he is entirely gay, allegedly.
Possibly. They don't really allude to it in this. I think that's more kind of a fan theory.
Well, she kind of does, because she says...
Well, she does. Yeah, she alludes to it.
Is it me watching me with other men, or is it just the men?
Yeah, I don't know if she's just doing that just as, you know, a dig at him. You know, like the... You know, just you're gay, or if it is meant to be a bit more. But she just goes, "I'm going to bed. Like, I'm sick of this. I'm going to bed."
But she pulls out the gun beforehand and shoots it, and he's like, "I loaded that with blanks."
Yeah. What I do like is that he goes off back to the security guard, and he's like, "This is really good stuff, but like, how are you doing it?" And he turns him around, and there's just his face has just been eaten.
Yeah.
I think that's a great scene, because he just turned like he like backpedals. Which, you know, you would. You turn a guy around and his face is gone. You're gonna freak out. But then on the screens, he sees someone walking around as a doctor. Now, we obviously know it's the original doctor walking around. And he's just like, there it is. That's how she's doing it. She's paid somebody else to be in here. She's paid that doctor. And he goes looking for this doctor.
Yeah, I mean, he has the... You see him with, like, a bone saw or whatever.
I mean, probably not the guy you want to go chasing when... You've seen a guy with his face like eaten off. That would definitely stop me being going chasing a guy walking around with a bloody hatchet in his hand. Like,
and then you see her asleep as well.
He sees her asleep, yeah. And he's like, that's how she's doing it. But he's a bit too confident in, like, I'll go chase this random guy around after seeing this guy's head getting eaten.
Well, he probably would be to an extent. Like, you think he holds all the control. So he technically should be controlling everything, and he thinks she's just set him up then with the security guard. Like,
yeah, possibly, but it's still a bit weird. Like, I don't think I wouldn't be that confident, is what I'm saying, to go hunting this random guy I seen walking around with a big,
big old bone saw.
Bone saw when I've just seen some guy's face gone. I wouldn't be, and that she has a loaded gun. Yeah. And she hates me. I probably wouldn't be that confident in my ability to go off looking for somebody on my own.
Yeah. Great pack.
But, I think, like, that's quite good. And then we hear screams, and we go down, and Evelyn's on the electroshock table, and they're trying to turn it off, turning all these switches and stuff. And there's an actual note of panic in his voice, which I think is, like, is he panicking because... he's afraid that everyone's going to think he set this up because they've been fighting loads in front of them?
The killer, yeah, or to set it up, yeah.
Or is there actually some sort of feeling there between the two of them underneath all the resentment?
Or he still loves her one or the other?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, that's why I was kind of like, is there some that little bit, like, yes, he does hate her, obviously, but there seems to be some still that he does still care about her because he's panicking when she's been, like, in the electroshock. And he's like, turn it off. And he's like trying to grab her. And they're like, definitely don't touch her.
Yeah.
You will get electroshock. Do not touch her.
Like, even the special effects for this, like, they had the foam and the white stuff coming out of her mouth and all. I thought it was done very well, yeah.
Yeah. But they obviously turn it off, and the Blackburn pronounces her dead, and they're like, "No, she can't be dead." And he's like, "No, she dead."
Yeah, y'all dead.
Yeah, which like I really like this because I was like, okay, they've now killed off two characters, but this one seems less, you know, like the first one, you know, is a bit freaky because, you know, we saw the thing run up behind her. This one, you're like, oh, she's just been strapped to this table and electrocuted. Power. And you're like, he's like, one of you's killed her. And you're like, that would be the conclusion you jump to. Like, someone's just been strapped to a table and shocked electrically to death. You're not going to think ghost. You're going to think
person.
One of you random people here did this.
But yeah, like it's all conspiracy against him. Then he starts to think everyone's against him.
Well, they, to be fair, he's not wrong to think that because they do take him and lock him in that like hallucination chamber.
That's true. Well, then again, he's the only one that's set to gain from her being dead.
Yeah, and they, like as I said, they have shown that they completely hate each other. I don't know why they left someone stand guard, to be honest. They're like, we've locked him in. And your man Blackburn's like, I'll stay here and watch him. And they're like, yeah, you stay here and watch him. I mean,
how anybody thinks that's a good idea. Like, if you've seen someone get sucked into the wall of a house, I am not staying outside the chamber by myself.
Well, I mean, I suppose they just assume that he's killed her and the wife now. But at the same time, I'd be like, we've locked him in there. We don't need, like, how's he going to get out? We'll all just go back up and, you know, there were six guns upstairs. We'll each take one and we'll just sit upstairs. If he comes near us, we'll just shoot him. But they're all just like, yeah, no, you just stay there with him. And then he obviously turns it on and we see the chamber, which is like some guy bouncing a basketball. And he eventually gets the goggles on and stuff like that. And
man, that gave me a headache watching that scene.
Yeah, well, imagine what it'd be like strapped in there. I think that's the good thing about it.
It kind of, like, I don't know what it is you've seen, the Conjuring 2, when they're looking at the tall man box, where you see it flicking around. It's kind of like that. And I was looking at it going, things like that just hurt my head.
And well, that sort of thing is true. Like, that is how certain tortures were done back in the day, is that they would have done stuff like that. So it is quite realistic. And it would drive you insane seeing something like that, I'd imagine.
Jeez.
But I like that they show him doing that, and then Blackburn goes off and he goes back to Evelyn. And it's a real creepy scene where he's like drawing the blood off the side of her mouth and stuff, and like kissing her. And I was like, man, this is real weird. Like, this is getting real creepy.
And then he has that real creepy line where he's like, oh, you're a lot more accepting or something now.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, he's like running his hand down her leg and all. I was like, man, is this just like a kind of like a rape scene on a dead body coming up here? I was like, this is a bit much. Like, I'm not, like, maybe just cut away from this. We don't really need this. But then we see him inject her with something. Yeah. And she wakes up pretty much instantly. She's just like, yeah, grand, perfect. Like, I can't imagine you'd wake up that quick, no matter what it was.
Well, she woke up fine. Like, you'd wake up groggy as fuck or whatever. Like,
Yeah, she just wakes up fine. But I do like this scene because I genuinely, like, the first time I watched this, I was like, she's definitely dead. Like, that's two people dead. Stephen Price has been sent insane in there. So, like, now if he ends up actually killing them, he'll be, like, I don't know about you guys, but when I'm watching a film, like, for the first time, and it's a horror film or, like, like a murder mystery sort of thing, I'm like, okay, they are giving clues here. So you're like, okay, she's dead, the other one's dead, and now he's been driven insane. So, like, in my head, the first time I saw this, I was thinking, you know, what's going to happen is he's now going to kill the rest of them because he obviously thinks they've killed his wife, and then the police will arrest him and the house will continue to do what it does in future generations. And I was like,
That would have been a good way of doing it.
Yeah, and that, in my head, I was like, that's going to be the story. But then she gets brought back to life, and I'm like, okay, that theory is completely out now because now she's not dead. And she's just asking your man, Blackburn, like, where's your one? The Melissa girl, where's she gone? And he's like, oh, I don't know. I said, what do you mean you don't know? I don't know. Like, how? She dragged into the walls or something. I don't know. I didn't go searching the walls, man. Like, you know, she's dead. Just, she's gone. And she's not accepting that. So. And she's a really vengeful, spiteful person because she just picks up that knife and just stabs this man that she had conspired with to kill her husband, which I suppose maybe is the smartest thing because now he can't.
Yeah. Well, like, no, wasn't it? Well, it wasn't even for them to kill him. It was for one of the six to kill him so that it didn't look like she was done for murder. And obviously she gets his money or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, but she then kills the doctor.
Yeah, because she goes, she's like, I know how to frame him to, so that it'll look as if he had killed him, and then he would put him beside a dead body.
Yeah, but then her body's gone as well, and you're like, well, where's your body gone?
She stabbed the shit out of him with a little scalpel.
Yeah, and then she manages to cut his head off.
It's all sorts of weird, that.
Yeah, puts it into the chamber, and it's up on the thing. But while she's doing all, while all this is happening, the others are looking around the house, or looking around the into the doctor's room and stuff, and they see a little plaque with the names of everyone that's been invited on the plaque. And they're like, why are all these names here? And Pritchett comes in, and he's like, oh, those are the ones that they all worked here. And
they're the survivors.
They're the survivors. And they work out like, oh, so it's the ancestors of the survivors that all got invited here. Mm. And they're like, except one. They're like, one name's not on this list, and it's Blackburn. They're like, so what's he doing here? How did he get the invite?
Light bulb.
Which is something I like, because as you said earlier, Greg, there's four names on the list when he's typing it out at the start. And it kind of goes by quickly. You just see the computer redoing the names.
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe there was five names on that list. But then they mentioned this, and you're like, oh, there was only four names on the list. So the house only still did invite four people.
Well, she'd given him a list of what looked like 200 pages.
Yeah, but the list he wrote only had four people, and then five people showed up, but he still only invited four, which I think is a nice little thing they did. They were like, the computer did change those four, but it didn't invite a fifth. She invited the fifth, and now they've worked that out. I thought that was a nice little clue that they left themselves there, like,
yeah, left it wide open, then you're like, oh shit. Except the fact that you just see him get stabbed about 15 times.
Yeah, but they go down to confront him about that and then find his body in the hallucination chamber, body missing, and Stephen Price missing.
Yeah, this was brilliant. I was like, oh my God, it's Blackburn in there. Sitting there baiting the door open like.
Yeah. And then they get him out and his head's on the...
on the window ledge.
It's on like a spike on the window ledge, and his body falls out. And there is a little scene before this when Blackburn and Evelyn are talking, and he's like, they're like, so who do you think is going to kill Price? And he's like, they're like, it's going to be Eddie. And Blackburn's like, I think it's your one, Sarah. I think she's the one that's going to do it. She's going to surprise everyone. Which I like, because it's them two, you know, it shows how like uncaring they are about everyone else in the house, that they only care about themselves. And they're just like, we'll see which one of them gets the murder pinned on them. It's fine.
Well, like, if you're looking at it, so she's going to stand to make all the money out of it. So, yeah. Like, if he's willing to give five people or 5 million quid to survive a night, you have to wonder how much money he has.
Exactly, yeah. But they, you know, they kind of... Sarah then empties the gun into Price, which I think he does, like, the acting he does here is brilliant, where he's like...
help.
He's just like, help. Like, he's completely out of it, which, you know, after what he's just being put through, makes sense. And then she just empties. I like that she misses the first shot. Mm-hmm. Because, you know,
misses badly.
Yeah, but she has no experience with a gun. And then, you know, he steps a little bit closer. So, that, you know, it's going to be hard to miss from that range, I suppose, then. And she just empties the shots into him.
Yeah.
And it looks like he's then dead. And you're like, okay, now the stories come together. Evelyn killed your one, then she killed the doctor, and now she's managed to get him killed, and she's been behind it the whole time. You know, that's the murder mystery. And then she's got to pin it on the house, because Sarah's now killed him, so she can pin that on Sarah. Sarah goes away. She walks away scot-free.
And which?
Yeah, so they all go back upstairs, and she decides to gloat over the body of her dead husband, again another little twist, not dead.
Hilarious.
Where did he get a bulletproof vest? And why? And if he had it when he came in, why did he have it if he loaded all those guns with blanks?
Yeah. So, again, that's probably another reason why it's marked down so much. Unless there's something in the director's cut that a lot of people haven't seen as to where he gets that from.
Yeah, it's weird, like.
Because that makes me wonder when he does a complete 180 when she gets electrocuted or whatever.
Yeah.
And he goes from being like, this is her. I know she's doing something. I don't know how she's doing it, but she's definitely doing something to me. And then he sees her and he thinks she's dead or whatever. And he takes a complete 180 and he's like, right, now it's real. One of yous have killed her. And it makes me wonder then when they go back, kind of do another 180, it's like, wait a sec. Was he preparing all along for maybe some sort of a double cross?
That's what I was thinking. Is he so far ahead of the game? Is he playing 4D chess? Like, he's sitting here, we're all playing checkers, and he's playing 4D chess. Like, I'm going to... Someone's going to kill her, but then they're going to try and kill me, so I need to be prepared, but then they're going to think I did it. And you're just like, man, how far ahead is this guy's brain thinking that he has all this stuff just prepared for himself? And, like, did he load the guns with blanks? Was that always the plan? Or was his plan that, like, I know she's going to try and kill me, so I'll wear the bulletproof vest and then she'll shoot me. They'll all say she shot me and then I'll kill her. Like, is that what he had planned the whole time? Like, how far ahead was he?
But then you have that point of, what if he shoots me in the head?
Yeah.
the old dumb and dumber.
Yeah. Wait, what if he shot me in the head?
That's why we didn't mention that. But the two of them get into like a little fight downstairs. Well, the last remaining three of Pritchett, Eddie, and Sarah are trying to crack open the windows again. And they get into this fight down there, and they're just like throwing each other around. And then he throws her through the door that had never been opened. And this is again where I was like, does he actually have feelings for her? Because he sees whatever it is kind of coming along the floor, getting closer to her, and he's like, get up now. And there's like genuine fear and, you know, panic in his voice for her being killed.
I think that's more he didn't believe in the house, but he's now gathered what's happened after he had the hallucination, and then he's now seeing this coming. He's like, oh shit, we're in trouble now.
Yeah, but why does he care about saving her? Because seconds before, he's, you know, intent on killing her. So why is he staying? Like, he stays there to help her out, which is why I still think, like, the bit where he's genuinely seems upset when she's been killed by the electrocution, and then this bit where he seems genuinely upset that, you know, something is about to kill her. Like, they obviously have a horrible relationship, and physical abuse doesn't seem to be too uncommon in it, and definitely verbal abuse. But he seems genuinely
distraught.
Like, genuinely like he cares for her when it's an actual life or death situation. Now, I know some people will say, like, yeah, but that's just general human emotion. But he clearly, it's a bit different with the two of them, where I can understand why she would be, you know, panicking because something's coming towards her on the ground. So I can understand her panic and just be like, whoever tries to save me, I'm going to run to them. But I think that he does still care about her in some way. There's just too much in it that shows that he does.
To me, it does look like he still cares, but she has zero interest. Like,
well, she does tell him that she only ever married him for his money. That she when she's gloating over his body, just so you know, I only married you for your money.
Yeah, no, but like, you can tell, like, even from when, like, he's getting closer, when she turns around and says, "Is it me? Seeing me with the men, or is it just the men?" Like, you can see that he still has something for her.
Yeah. And I think that is the point, that he does always still care for her because, like, he knows that she doesn't love him. So he tries to kind of physically distance himself from her and tries to actually hate her. But in the moments of panic, his real emotions kind of seem to come forward. And he tries to save her, but then this kind of, it's not a ghost, but it's kind shadow. Of a shadow. Yeah, like the shadow, like, envelops her.
Well, this is where Pritchett says earlier on, you don't want the darkness to get out.
Yeah, but he doesn't see. The thing is, he says he's never opened that door. So does he know that the darkness is behind there? Or
I'd say 100% he knows.
How would
I'd say his dad or his granddad had told him.
But again, how would they know? That's the sort of thing I mean. Like, how do they?
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. Like, they know that the darkness is behind there, but there's no explanation to that. But we see it, like, envelop her, and she kind of, she burns, which is, makes sense because obviously the whole place burnt down.
Yeah.
But you also see, like, in that darkness, there is faces of, you know, the victims and the, like, the doctor and stuff like that in it as well.
Well, I was looking when I was having a look around to it. So when they make that darkness into, like, the tentacly shadowy thing, they took out, like, a lot of women images and just, like, multiplied them by, like, 10,000 in different shapes and sizes to make that.
Yeah.
So, like, you can see it when it's panning in, you can see the other people. There's also that you can see the figures of women in it from where they've made it. And like, that's how they designed that, the darkness or whatever they want to call it, innit?
I also find stuff like that interesting. Like, this is how we created this noise, or this is how we created this sort of image.
Like, the one that gets me there, like, Aaron's top there is Evil Dead. And, you know, in the original one where the thing goes through her ankle. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, oh, and they had to ask Sam Raimi how he done it. And he's like, I stuck a pencil into an apple. And he's like, that's just simple as that. They were trying to recreate it for ages. And he's like, I stuck a pencil into an apple.
It's mad. Like, you know, something works. And you, like, you know, he's obviously spent ages thinking about that as well and just tried stuff. And eventually something.
But like, how can a designer come up with that image and be like, I'm just going to take, say, a whole lot of stripper images and just multiply them and black and white them and then make it that way.
Well, that's the thing. That's where I suppose that's why people get paid good money, because they can come up with stuff like that, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I like that darkness image where it does, like, kind of envelop, like, it just kind of engulfs them. Yeah, but it doesn't just swallow them, like, it engulfs them, but you can still see their physical form and can see what's happening to them. Like, you can see them, like, crumpling in on themselves, the hands, like, closing in.
Yeah,
and like, you can see the pain in her face as she's been burned alive by this darkness. No,
I hadn't seen anything really like that in a movie for a while, up until I watched that Scary Story to Tell in the Dark, mm-hmm. where the kid's running around the hospital and this big weird slob monster thing just kind of swallows them, just like the blob just goes over him and he just kind of crumples up exactly like that, and just gets sucked in, and that's that. Like.
But once it kills Evelyn, it starts chasing Stephen Price up the stairs, and they all hear him banging on the door, asking to be let out.
Yeah, let me out. No, I'm not opening that door. Nope.
Pritchett starts walking towards it, and I'm like, he was the last person I expected to go near that. And then the door opens, and Price manages to dive to the side as the thing, like, this shadow, like, dives at him. Unfortunately, Pritchett is the one in the way. And gets
When he gets sucked down,
yeah,
he throws himself. It looks like a window.
Yeah, that's what I think it is. I think it's like a little window, but obviously the shutter is then behind it, so you can't you can't go through the window. So he just gets stuck in the window ledge. Like,
the poor fucker opens the door, and that's the end of that. Well, that again is another horror 101.
Yeah.
You open that door and you're in trouble. Like.
But I like that it kind of like sprang at him and then sprang back like a yo-yo. And then
it sucked him and he was gone back down the stairs. Like,
because it thinks it's got the last person. And then Stephen Price gets out, and it's like, and that to me kind of says that the last person they're looking at is Price.
Yeah.
That's the one that they want to get.
I think it's just anybody that's in the house.
That's what I thought originally, but then because it thought it got him and then went back down the stairs. I'm like, why did it retreat back down the stairs if it thought
that it
got Price, and it still knows there's two people directly in front of it? So I was like, is Price the
target?
Is he the number one target here? But he gets out and just runs up to them, and he's like, let's get to the attic. Again, horror films 101. You either go basement or you go attic, and both seem to be a bad choice.
I think this was great camera work where... they've got they close the door, and you see the door swelling up, and then it just obviously explodes. But like, the other two are just standing there watching it, and you're like, what are you doing?
Well, I mean, you probably would be rooted to the spot if you just saw that, I suppose.
If that's the worst thing you're going to see that night, I'm 100% not standing still anywhere.
Yeah, but I suppose like the actual shock of it, you'd be like, oh shit, this house, like the house is actually haunted.
That's the first time you really see something.
Yeah. It's, like, I could understand being shocked, but they get out of it pretty quick and they chase Price up to the attic.
Like the scene there where they're getting chased and the thing goes into the floor.
Yeah.
And it runs like a trail of dynamite running along the floor.
And then just...
It's brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's very good. They get up into... They get into the attic and Price is, like, panicking. And he's, like, hitting things and, you know, trying to pull stuff and it doesn't work. And it gets the pipe and he hits the oak and he's like, this will get it moving. And it just snaps it. And he's like, God, for God's sake. He just throws the pipe and it hits a lever.
Hits a lever.
Yeah. And it just happens to work. And he's like, I'm a genius.
It's a brilliant little scene there, though. And okay, the shutter starts to go up.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's...
I like that because then he realizes and he leans over and he's like, I've got a way out to them. And he's like, get up here. So they run up.
As you do.
You know, they're like, we've got a way out, so let's go.
Usain Bolt up the stairs there.
Yeah. But they get up. And what I like here is that they kind of get separated a little bit. And your one Sarah is kind of like, it's going at Sarah. And then Stephen Price kind of like jumps in the way, sort of.
Yeah, he's like, he knew he wasn't getting out.
He knew he wasn't, so he was like, I'll save her, which it doesn't redeem him entirely, but it shows again that he's not as cold and vindictive as
he's made
out to be from the start.
This is the horror character 101, really. You have the dickhead that turns good.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? He, you had the MD who turned out to be an arsehole. Seemed nicey-nice, turned to be an arsehole.
Yeah, then you have
dickhead that goes...
Very horror film trope, isn't it? Like,
yeah. I was generally like, obviously, then they get she gets out the window onto the tiny little ledge.
What I like is that as she's going out to the window, you can see like one of the tentacles or things like trying to break the rope. It's like pulling at the rope, trying to break it, and you can see that the window is
hanging,
getting slightly lowered. And she manages to get out. And as Eddie goes to jump out, it clangs shut again. And again, I was like, he's going to get halfway out and get killed, isn't he? Like, it's going to be another one. And again, they don't. Yeah, I was like, surely two scenes where someone's diving at a window that's coming down on them. One of them's getting cut in half. They didn't do it earlier. Definitely doing it now.
They definitely just saved that for 13 ghosts.
Yeah, probably. But what I like is that when he's in the corner, the thing's like coming at him and he's like screaming, I'm adopted.
Yeah.
As if you can bargain with this dark shadowy thing. Like, I'm adopted.
It kind of seemed to work because the shadow opens out and you see the faces of people talking to him. And obviously the people that have been killed.
Well, that's what I was going to say. The one that opens the thing for him to get out
is Pritchett.
It's Pritchett.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I like. It's Pritchett. It's just like, well, you know, I got killed, so I've been engulfed by this thing.
But how does he get out of the body? Save everyone.
Yeah, but he's like, I'm going to save everybody.
Yeah, but like, how does he get out of that body? You know what I mean? Because like, you look when the shadow opens out, you see Bridget Wilson's character, you see Evelyn as well. They're talking. They're two of the faces that are talking.
Yeah, but I'm wondering, is that the reason for that? Because Pritchett isn't one of the ones that the shadow was actually aiming for. So it's not overly concerned with him,
or is it
kind of a nobody to him because he isn't one of the people that worked there. He just somehow, his family now owns this house,
or that'd be the reason why, is because he owns the house.
Yeah, I think it's something along that lines, that like the entity just is kind of not too focused on him, and he manages to open the door.
It got him by mistake.
It manages to open the window. Sorry, and out gets it. And I like that Eddie doesn't realize that it's opened, that it's Sarah like grabs his ankle and rips him out. And then they're sitting on the ledge and she sees the little
envelopes,
which, you know, how the hell did they get there?
And how did it just perfectly stop?
Yeah, well, they were either in Pritchett's pocket or they were in...
No, but Price's like, how pocket. Did it perfectly stop as soon as the window came down to stop it?
Yeah, but also, how did it get up there? Because it was in one of those two pockets. So,
well, yeah, Pritchett, or not, it was in Price's pocket.
I think it's in Pritchett's pocket. Because does he not give it to Pritchett ages beforehand?
I can't remember.
downstairs, he says, you hold on to this and anyone that survives.
Oh, yeah, maybe, yeah, that does, yeah.
But he doesn't actually ever give it to him, so I don't know, did he give it to him, or is it in his own pocket? And if it is, how did it survive the shadowy thing?
Yeah, it's a bit weird.
But obviously, it slips through, and they're like, oh, great, we've got all these checks. One, like, they're all blank checks, so we'll split them, three million each, lovely. Yeah. And they're like, grand. They're laughing away up there, and you're like, ah, how do we get down?
Did you notice that when they're looking at the checks, all the check numbers are the same?
Yeah. So it's, but I like that they're, well, that's, you know, Price the smart man. He's like, yeah, yeah, if you survive, you all get a check, but only one of them's ever going to be able to cash it.
Yeah. First one to the bank wins.
Yeah. But I like that they're just sitting there and they're like, how do we get down? And nothing happens from there. It's just like, yeah.
Yeah,
we're not going back in there to get down.
Well, they can't get back in.
Even if they could, I don't think they would.
Yeah. Well, they might have phone signal out there now.
Do they still have their phones? It doesn't show you that. It just ends with them going, how do we get down? What I like is that the window does shut, though. They make sure that the window does.
You see Pritchett look, and then he lets it go.
Yeah. Because obviously, if the window doesn't shut, does that mean that the darkness could then get out? So I do like that they they closed that plot hole, like they closed any sort of loophole there of, oh, well, it's going to follow them or this, that, or the other. No, they got out and it's locked into that house. Done.
This is another one. I haven't seen this in, Jesus, must be 2002, probably I've seen it. So what's that, 19 years? At that, the black guy survives this one. Because there's not many horror movies where the black guy survives. The only other one I can think really that I could ever really think of off the top of my head was Anaconda with Ice Cube.
Mm-hmm. And funny in this, actually, I thought that the Eddie character was set to die or something happened, because isn't he the first one who looks like he's possessed or whatever when they go down?
Well, no, yeah, that's where the vat of blood thing.
Yeah, and I was like, all right, okay, he's already dead. Or is going to die soon.
Like he always keeps jumping in the way of stuff, because when the glass smashes, he's the one that saves Evelyn. So you're just like the whole time you're like, he's the one that dives at her to save her. He's the one that actually seems to have a backstory. You know, I used to be a famous pro basketballer. Baseball. Was it baseball?
Baseball, yeah.
Was it baseball? Yeah. So he actually, like, they give an actual backstory to him. You know, he's got a love interest. Everything points at, like,
he's dead.
He's going to die at some point. Like, and that's why at the end where it's like he kind of tells her to go out first, you're like, there you go. Yeah. He saves her and
when
he dies.
When it's not shut then and he's like cowering in the corner, you're like, yeah, okay, yeah, mate, yeah. Sorry, that's you gone, mate.
Yeah, one person survives to tell the story of what happened. No one will ever believe them. That's a good ending to the story. But then they actually let him live, which I think, like, again, it's a very strange one in a horror film.
Yeah, well, it's not often you see a main girl and the love interest survive.
Just one normally survives to tell the story. That's usually the general rule.
So sometimes you can get two or three survive, but you never really see the love interest.
Yeah.
Or the black guy, but
yeah, that did tend to be.
That's a whole different rule.
They kind of have moved away from that trope, thankfully, but that did used to be the big trope of, like, well, you know, the black guy always kind of does get killed first.
What I also liked about this as well is they didn't focus on half-naked girls, mad sex scenes or whatever. Like, don't get me wrong, they're great to see in some of the movies, but, like, to make a good horror movie, you don't need them.
Well,
if you do it right, you don't need them.
They kind of stepped away from a lot of the tropes, I think. You know, like her putting her hand in the wall didn't happen. Two people diving at something that's shutting down at them doesn't kill them.
There's a lot of tropes
that they don't take. Like, they don't take the bait there, which I think is good because, you know, as a horror fan, you're expecting it. So you're just like, this is what's going to happen. And then it doesn't happen. You're like, oh, it kind of piques you a bit. You're like, oh, that didn't happen. So
it's a lot of false things from what you know of horror movies, you know, and then you're thinking, yeah, this is it now for you. You're done.
Yeah. As I said, like, at the start, like, I still don't understand why this is rated so poorly. I think it's quite an enjoyable film. It's not scary, I suppose, which I suppose a horror film should be, but I don't know.
I'd say when this came out in 1999, for the effects that were in it, It probably was. Like, I remember one of my cousins going to see it and tell me about it in the cinema. And they were like, yeah, it was terrifying.
Yeah, but I think it's a perfectly good film. Like, it's not, you know, it's not the best film I've ever seen or anything, but I genuinely don't understand the apparent dislike for this film at all.
I will now, at some stage, go and watch part two.
Part two is a different story. All right, yeah. The dislike for part two, I do understand a lot more than I understand the dislike for part one.
Well, I'll give you a funny one about this. Like, so this is obviously House on Haunted Hill, the Mike Flanagan Haunting of Hill House. When I started watching that, I never put one and one together that it was the same thing until like three episodes in. I was like, oh wait, now I get it. I don't know how, it just didn't dawn on me. Maybe it's because it was a TV show. And I knew there was a second season coming. I was like, oh. And I was like, oh, wait. No, yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
But it's an enjoyable movie. If I never seen it again, so be it. There's other horror movies I'll put on in front of it.
I'm definitely interested in seeing this the Blu-ray with the director's cuts to see how much of a difference that now makes to it. Like, that's something I'm actively going to seek out. Like,
where did you get it, Aaron?
I can't remember who I was. It through Amazon, maybe. It's the Scream Factory release.
Mm. Yeah, Scream Factory are bringing out a lot of the good ones again, aren't they?
Yeah, well, I got House on Haunted Hill. I got Ghost Ship. I got 13 Ghosts.
Oh, you got the Dark Castle.
And it's funny because I didn't even realize until a couple of years ago that at the time they had all come out under the same umbrella. I was like, wait, I just really like that style of movie then or something. Because they're coming back, aren't they? Dark Castle is coming back.
I said that to Greg before you got on, actually. I was like, are Dark Castle still a thing? I was like, because I remember when I seen the intro to that, I was like, Dark Castle, I used to love Dark Castle films. And I was like, I haven't seen anything from them for ages. And I was like, are they dead? Are they gone? And he was looking it up and he said, they're not gone, but...
They went on a hiatus, and then 2017, 2018, they brought out one and two. And then there's one coming out, I think it's called Siren, something like that. It's coming out this year, later on this year.
Oh, wow, I didn't realize. So I listened to, there's a bloody disgusting podcast called The Boo Crew. And I was listening to their latest episode, and they had an interview with a guy called Simon Barrett. And he directed that movie you're talking about. Seance is the name of it.
Seance, the new one, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm interested now that Dark Castle have stepped back into the kind of horror genre and they're coming, because although the films might not be amazing, the style of them I do like.
They're doing a prequel to Orphan as well.
Yeah, I heard that. I'm not too interested. Orphan, I watched it twice, I think, and
it's passable.
Now, if it had been a prequel or a sequel to The Orphanage, we might be in business. But yeah, the Orphan was just all right. It's the same they're doing. Is it The Boy 3 is coming out now or 2? They're trying to jump in on ones that done well at the time, but like they butchered things like that in the past.
Yeah. They had an all right run there for a while. I mean, like, by horror movie standards, I guess, you had what? House on Haunted Hill, 13 Ghosts, Ghost Ship, Gothica, which I really like.
I've only seen that once, and I can't remember hating it, and I can't remember liking it. I can just remember that car scene where she flips the car.
Yeah.
It's Halle Berry, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I always found that movie good. House of Wax as well. I love that one. Like, cheesy as fuck. But
I remember the only scene I really remember with House of Wax is Paris Hilton getting the thing straight up her Achilles. And all I can remember thinking, going, oh Jesus, that looks bad.
There's a couple of grim scenes in it, actually.
Yeah, she gets a bad one, didn't she?
Yeah.
I think those foot scenes, you know, where it's like something goes through like someone's ankle or something like that. Even though they're not like the most gruesome, those are the ones that I find that people always, always are like, that's the one that got me. That's the one that sent the shivers up my spine. Because there's stuff that you're like, okay, it's unlikely that something's ever going to pierce your ankle like that. Oh. But we've all experienced, you know, like...
A roll of an ankle
or hitting your ankle on a corner or something. We've all experienced that. So you can actually imagine the pain of that. Whereas when you see someone get, like, you know, stabbed in the neck or something like that, you're like, there's no real preface in your head of like, well, for most people, there's not a preface in your head of, I know how that would feel. Whereas with your ankle, you're like, I know exactly how bad, like not exactly how bad that feel, but I've had smaller instances and they hurt a lot. So I can only imagine how bad that one feels. Like that always seems to be the, like we did, what was it, Greg? We did Con Air, and you see your man get stabbed in the ankle and you're just like, oh, that's the bit that gets you. Cause you know, you've had something small like that happen, like stand on a pin or clatter your ankle off something, and you're just like, I know how much that's gonna hurt. Like, I know that that's gonna kill. Like,
the ones that get me are if you see someone like break their dislocate their shoulder or something, because I've done it, I'm just like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, when it's something you can actually imagine, you're like, okay, yeah, that really gets at people. Whereas the real gory stuff
doesn't bother me.
I think people are just like, yeah, it like if you're not comfortable with like seeing blood and gore and stuff, yeah. But if like most horror fans are, so they don't really react to it. But all of them seem to react to those things like a broken wrist or a snapped this or something.
Yeah, when the bone comes out.
Yeah, people can react to that. Like, because you can feel it. Like,
even in I'm a big fan of Hostel, and even in that, like, there's some of the things in that, I know it can be quite gory in parts, but just the more subtle things, I guess, like the part where he tells him, you know, okay, I'll leave then or walk out or whatever, and then he slashes the back of his.
The Achilles like, always looks bad. Doesn't matter whenever. Like, I remember watching the movie, I can't remember what it is now, and your man sitting on a chair. Oh no, it's not. It's the original Pet Sematary, where Ched's sitting on the chair, and the thing slashes his heel with the scalpel.
And I think that's in the new one as well.
It's kind of similar to it, yeah. But
they don't show it's not as bad, but they do have something similar.
Like, you see him go to step forward, and you can see the Achilles tendon is just gone, and you're like, Jesus.
That's what I mean. See, like, that's the bit that gets everybody. Just something that you can actually not imagine exactly, but you have some sort of pre understanding of, you know, I can imagine how bad that would hurt because I've knocked my ankle off something. Like, you know that there's an actual pain there. Whereas, you know, seeing someone get their head cut off, you're like, yeah, that's pretty gory. That was good. You're not like, oh, I can imagine how that feels. You're just like, yeah, okay, fair enough. But like, I don't know, like, I really enjoyed this film to sit down and rewatch now. And I'm really glad that you picked it, Aaron, because it's not, as Greg said, it's not something I'd have had at the top of my list to be like, I'll sit down and rewatch that.
But it
is one that I've rewatched now. And now that you've mentioned that there is a Blu-ray with like director's kind of cuts and stuff in it, I'm very interested in seeing that and seeing, you know, well, especially with Zack Snyder's Justice League, you know, director's cuts like that having come out now. Obviously that's 4 hours long or whatever, but there's so many films where I'm like, you know, oh, they're like the cast or the crew will come out and say, oh yeah, we cut this scene, and you're just like, that scene could make a big difference to this film. Like, that really could change the story of this film.
There is a scene that is cut off this where Bridget Wilson's character is, the other way she's saying she wants to be an actress or something. She's on the set arguing with a producer, and the producer is the original person who played her character in the 1959 one.
Yeah.
So there's things like that. That
sort of one is like, it's a nice scene, but I can understand why something like that would be cut, because, you know,
it's not necessary.
It doesn't actively add to it, but like scenes where they're like explaining a little bit more about the history of the place and why he hasn't sold the house, those are stuff that you're like, okay, that actually does add to the story. And I'm like, why would they have been cut? Like, why did you cut that?
If I remember correctly, part two explains a lot more.
Yeah, but I don't like that. I don't like when there's a part two that explains more, because surely I should have, like, I don't mind it, like a part two going in a little bit more in depth, but you shouldn't need to have had to watch part one, then watch part two to be able to understand stuff that happened in part one. You know, you should be able to understand what happened in part one from part one, and then part two is like, we'll give you a little bit extra so that we can now do this scene in part two. It shouldn't be like, I've watched part one and part two and I now understand why that happened in part one. I don't think, because what happens if you don't make that part two? Then nobody ever knows that.
But there's movies that haven't gone on because it didn't do too well.
Yeah, exactly. And then you're just left with not knowing.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I really enjoyed this, and I think that roller coaster scene at the start, I think that leads on to the Final Destination's being made. I think that's where the idea for Final Destination kind of comes from, because, you know, it's people, they see something in front of them, like, I just saw that happen and this could happen. And I kind of think that's where the premise of Final Destination comes from. Like, somebody sees something happen.
Well,
and then they obviously have to pad it out themselves then, but the whole idea of it being like a roller coaster ride or something tragic happening and somebody kind of seeing it happen before it happens, which is your man seeing the carriage go off the rails beforehand.
Yeah.
I think that little bit, now maybe like I've never looked into it, but I just, to me, it screams that like Final Destination, somebody in that was involved in Final Destination watched this film and was like, got as far as there and went, I think, can do something with that.
I think they must have, because Ali Larder got pulled from this straight to Final Destination.
Yeah. So like, I don't know, to me it just screams that they were like, that's a fantastic idea. Like, somebody sees it, and then the film is based off that, because it, like, there's no way that that scene just has, whoever created Final Destination, I wouldn't believe them if they said, yeah, no, I'd never seen that film and never thought about it. I'd be like, nah.
You, sir, are a liar.
you got the, like, the very premise. Now, you obviously had to create a lot more, you know, for Final Destination, you know, to pad out the story. But the starting premise of somebody sees something happen on a roller coaster, you definitely got that from here.
Was the first Final Destination at the plane, though?
It might have been, but like, it's the idea that you saw something happen before it actually happens to you.
And you change fate.
Yeah. To me, that it just screams that, like, obviously this doesn't change fate because it's just, you know, that's how the thing is designed. But the idea that they saw it happen before it happened to them.
Yeah.
Just that premise to me just screams somebody saw that and went, I can make a film from that premise, which isn't something that's been done before.
Yeah.
But for this film, I really enjoyed this film. But again, it wouldn't be at the top of my horror list. There's a lot of other ones that would go up there above it. But I am very glad that you picked this one, Aaron. I'm very glad that, very happy that Greg got in contact with you to get you to come on, because I don't think we would have picked this one ourselves.
Ever.
Yeah, it was one of those ones I was trying to think of something
different.
Yeah, like that people probably would have known of, but it's a little bit more obscure. And I think I'm kind of the same. Like, I love the movie, and a lot of it is probably based off nostalgia. Like, I can remember back to years ago going and renting films, and a lot of the films I like now, I think some of it has to do with remembering, oh, remember that time I went down and I had to like sneak this or get somebody's brother to rent a tape or whatever.
Well, like, the way that works for me is when I was about 11, maybe 11 or 12, my man used to tell me, come watch whatever movie you want. You're just not allowed to watch like horror movies, and especially not allowed to watch Nightmare on Elm Street. And I had a TV in my room, and it was on. No, I snuck downstairs one night. And remember TG4 used to play? Yeah. And I remember watching it. I was like, yeah, fuck it, I'm going to watch this. And it all built from there. Like the very first scene in Nightmare on Elm Street where you see him like this in the alleyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh yeah, this can do.
Yeah.
This is it. Like, that's the nostalgia for me. Like, I'll always find something that throws back to a Nightmare on Elm Street, to a Halloween, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah. Like, everything's built off them, or built off the Universal Monsters, really.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just tailored around. But for me, like, I blame my parents for my obsession with horror.
Telling you couldn't watch it, which just made you want to watch it that bit more.
Well, it wasn't even that. Like, if it had been any other horror movie, I probably would have watched it But it was the fact that it was, you're not allowed to watch Nightmare on Elm Street. And then one night I found it. I'd gone down and I found it on the telly, and it only started. And I was like, yeah, must be.
This isn't going to be something that Aaron can, well, maybe he can, because I don't know what the cinema in Wexford was like, but I think you can blame Bray Cinema for that as well, because Bray Cinema, what age is that film for? 18s? What age are you? I'm 18. Some little 10-year-old. I'm 18. Oh, he's 18. Give him the ticket. Go on, off you go, buddy. Like, you can barely, you're like holding onto the counter with two arms to try and look up over it. I'm 18.
Standing on your mate's back going, yeah. Well, I remember getting into Bray Cinema to go and see Saw And we were, me and Harry were only 13 going in.
Yeah, you just tell them, what age are you? 18. Okay. And no. Like you've still got your like child's prepubescent voice of squeaky. What age are you? 18. All right. And like you're clearly not 18. Like you're one, you're like, you know, you're not even 5 foot. You're like holding onto the counter with your two hands so you can stick your head over so you can talk to them. And they're just like, yeah. Some days, like there was some people that wouldn't. So you'd look in and you'd be like,
yeah. See who's there.
Not getting in there tonight.
I was just going to say that.
Then you'd see the teenagers working who clearly just don't care and they're just like, give them whatever they want. I don't care. Just get, like, I'm minimum wage job. Just give the kid the ticket. Let them go and watch the scary film. I don't care.
I had that. Yeah. We definitely had that down here. You would number one, check to see who was working and you would kind of be able to gauge from there. And then number two, I learned that never go on like the first night or even maybe the opening weekend.
You're never getting in.
Oh, yeah.
When it's busy, you're never getting in.
So we would just wait then. And like, you know what?
At the time,
I think I was a little bit convinced that I was actually believable.
I think we all were. But now when you look back, you're like, yeah, I was, you mean, no.
Probably not.
Because they would say to me like, you know, I'd say, what age are you? And I'm like, 18. And I would have it all planned out, the year and everything. I would have it planned out in my head and I'd be like, whatever it was, 1990, whatever. And then they would be like, all right, have you got your ID? And I'd be like, oh, no, I left it in the car.
And then we would just have this weird look at each other.
The problem with, I don't know which part, are you from like the Wexford town area?
Yeah.
The only problem with the Wexford town area with that story is that they actually have a car park. So they could be like, go and get it. Whereas in Bray's one was on like this little site, like it was on a street where you'd go down.
Just off the main street, yeah.
Yeah, they wouldn't have a car park. So if you said, I left it in the car, you know, you'd have to park somewhere else.
Yeah.
So they'd be like, it's a little bit more believable. But in the Wexford one, you used to have to, you had to walk in a bit, if I remember,
to actually see the counter.
Did you?
Yeah.
So you had to like walk in and the counter is like on the left. So you had to like walk up and then the counter's on the left. Whereas the Bray cinema, the doors are here. And directly in front of it is the counter where you buy the tickets. And then there's a stairs at the side and all the films were up the stairs, which first of all, terrible idea, because once your film was finished, you were already upstairs with nobody there. So if you wanted to go see another film, you just walked into it.
Done that many of occasions.
But I mean, when you're younger, you don't really think about that too much because you're kind of like, I have to be home. Anyway, so I can't stay here for two more films.
I remember.
But like, yeah, we'd walk up to the doors, look in, and one person would come back. Not tonight, boys. All right, we'll go see some kids' film then. And then someone would walk up, and they'd be like, "It's good, lads." And we'd all walk up. 10-year-old with their 7 or 8 euro or whatever the cinema was. This film, please. I'm 18. Oh yeah, off you go, lads. Yeah, you've obviously got your own Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and then you've got your own podcast.
Social media, most of it is under First Class Horror.
What a page.
Bar Twitter, which is class_horror. And then the podcast is a little bit different. That's under Class Horrorcast. People always ask me why. I have no idea. Years ago when I started the blog, I think I put in the word horror into like some randomizer, like website name maker or something. And I just clicked it like 50 times. And I was like, no, that's shite. And then I seen this First Class Horror and I was like, do you know what? I can't be arsed looking anymore. I was like, I'll just pick that.
Yeah, well, it worked out.
And look, it kind of went from there. And then I just couldn't be bothered to change it. Like people, you know, I see all these other, like I know some people in America that have their own podcasts and stuff, and they come up with cool names like Plastic Fangs Podcast. And I'm like,
you could just say Retrotainment is quite good now.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Like, it's like, I hear these other names and I'm like,
we didn't come up with it. One of the lads on the, we're part of a network called the Dynamo Podcast Network, where there's different shows. So like there's one for football, which is called The Upper Tier. There's the mate, like one that's just like interviews with different people from different, like some pro wrestlers, some footballers, some like conspiracy theorists and stuff, and that's just called Dynamo's Dozen. Then there's a music one, King Woe's Court, your man's name that is Carl, and then King Woe was like the Two Tales of Woe was the name of his band, so that's why he went with that. But we're all in a group chat and we're trying to kind of come up with a name for our, like this one, So for me, it wasn't just like I have to think of it, but like I know the pain of thinking up a name. Like anytime, like I'm big into like computer games and stuff, and when you have to come up with a name for a character that you're going to play in like a game, you're just like, oh, you have to sit there. Like I'd be sitting there for like nearly an hour. I haven't played the game. Like I have the game set, like the game's ready to go, and I've sat there for an hour, and I was like, I don't have a name. Now finally I do have one, and I use that, like that's just my one go-to name. But I remember the first time trying to come up with it, I was like, I need to think of a name, and it took forever. And I know loads of people that did the same as you when they came up with the name generator, bam 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 bam, bam. That'll do, copy and paste, done. And then a couple of years later they're like, I really wish I hadn't done that.
Yeah, that's like, look, I've kind of accepted now I'm going to stick with it. I was going to do a complete 180 and try and pick something different.
I like First Class Horror, to be honest, as a name. Like,
and rebrand everything. But then I'm like, because when I hear like, you know, when I see like Retrotainment, it makes me think of, again, it's probably a guilty pleasure of mine. I love Halloween Resurrection just for how bad it is. And like things like Dangertainment and all. And it's like stuff that rolls off the tongue.
I was hoping you weren't going to say Halloween 3 there. And I was like, I just got that song stuck out of my head.
Yeah, you've probably put it back in your own head now, Greg.
I have now, yeah.
But yeah, like I think, I like First Class Horror as an actual name. I think, you know, the first class bit, it could apply to anything. So if you ever wanted to branch into something else, you've still got that brand part. And then you could be like First Class Comedy or whatever. So if you ever did want to brand out, I think you've left yourself open for that. So I actually do like that as a name.
Like, but, I haven't played branching out into wrestling for a while, but
that's one that everyone loves. Anyone who seems to love horror and like rock music and stuff,
wrestling
seems to be another one for them. And it's just, it's insane how much that crossover is there. But all the links for your stuff will be down below in the video. And then obviously for ourselves on the Dynamo Podcast Network, just give us a like, share, follow, and all that on YouTube. And we'll see you again. Good luck.
Thanks, lads.